it is exciting. It is exciting. Technology is changing a lot. I'm very thankful that Megan was here, because it's usually my job to give that part of the talk, and so I actually get to cover the fun stuff now. I get to take everything that she just covered and discussed with you and tell you about how it's currently being used in the Angus breed, how y'all as Angus breeders can use it and probably are using it, even if you don't know it, and how your customers can use it as well. So I thought you might find this really interesting. Sally and Brian came up here and talked about some interesting things coming down the road, but I wanted to make you all aware of just the mass quantity of information that feeds into those EPDs that I know you all sit by your computers and wait for every Friday morning. This year, about 17.3 million pedigrees were involved, 22 million different performance records fed in there to calculate about 62 million EPDs. And you're all familiar with these. You look those up every Friday morning, everything from maternal EPDs to growth, to the carcass EPDs, to the dollar value indexes. And as Brian shared with you earlier, probably a few more boxes coming in the future. On the forefront will be the productive life EPD that will be there for you. So what I wanted to do is take a few minutes and take all of that information that Megan just gave to you, and I'm going to kind of tell you the punchline right now before I tell you the joke, okay? If you can use an EPD and you have a pretty good grasp on accuracy, you can use genomic technology. That's all there is to it. Okay? And now that I've told you the punchline, I'm going to tell you a little bit of the joke, okay? So how is DNA technology currently being used in the beef cattle industry? And I'm not going to dwell on this for very long because Megan did a really good job and I think had a slide that looks almost identical to this. So it's currently being used in three ways. She talked about using it from the standpoint of doing tests for those simply inherited traits. You mentioned coat color. We're aware of the defects, so I'm not going to talk about that a lot. I am going to spend a little bit of time covering parentage with you, and I know a lot of you have probably done that from the seed stock standpoint and determining parentage, verifying parentage on the seed stock side, but I want to talk to you a little bit about how this might play in to ways your customers might be using it in the fairly near future. And then we're going to spend the most of our time between myself and Mark McCauley here in a second talking about genomic tests that are available for the performance traits, the growth traits, the carcass traits, reproductive traits, all of those things that put the money in your pocket, right? Okay, so let's roll right into it. Let's take a minute and talk about parentage, okay? It's been used, whether it be microsatellite parentage like you talked about, or we use SNP-based parentage to do parentage evaluation at the association these days, to maintain the integrity of our pedigree, make sure our genetic evaluations are as accurate as possible. But I want to spend a second and talk to you about parentage on the commercial side. This is going to tie in very nicely to what Mark is going to talk with you about here in just a minute. So the data that I have on the screen for you was came from UC Davis, and it was a commercial ranch project where they determined parentage based on the sire of all of the calves on some commercial ranches in Florida. So think about this in your customers that may have multi-sire pasture situations. They're kicking more than one bull out. And there's a couple of things that might be interesting, right, to figure out which bull is siring which calf. One, which of those bulls is siring the majority of the calves? And two, which of those bulls are siring the calves that are making money, doing the things that you need them to do? So not only quantity of calves on the ground, but also quality, right? And so I think this is fairly interesting. They went through and bought bulls in a couple of different years. You'll see there's eight different bulls in red, and there's eight different bulls that were procured in the second year in blue. All of these bulls were used for five calf crops, okay? And I don't know if you can see it. Those numbers are pretty tiny, and there's a lot of you pretty far away. But there were some of those bulls, and even though they were used for 5 years, only sired 7 calves over 5 years. Okay? And then on the high end of that, there's some of them, and these are just the steer progeny, okay, just the steers, some that had 77. And we see this time and time again. Every data set that I have looked at involving parentage and multi-sire pastures, we'll even see some where there's a bull out there that has 0. Big goose egg, okay? Those are what you need to identify and figure out the reason that that's happening. Then they followed these calves through. They sold them at 10 months of age to a feed yard. So they weaned them, sold them to the feed yard. But they were involved in a program such that after those animals were harvested, the ranchers did receive a premium based on how those cattle graded on the carcass. And so you'll notice that the gross revenue ranged from about $4,800 on the low end per sire up to about $56,000 per sire over the course of a 5-year period, okay? So in a commercial setting, identifying those bulls that A, sire the most calves, B, sire the calves that are performing like we need them to perform, and putting the cash in your customers' pockets can be a pretty valuable tool. Make sense? Okay, so that's parentage. So let's roll right on now and talk about that third way that DNA technology is currently being used in the cattle industry and in the Angus breed, and that's for performance traits. I'm going to split this part of the talk into two sections. I'm going to talk about for the registered breeder first, the DNA tests available for you, and then I'm going to turn the baton over and Mark's going to come up here and talk about some exciting new things for commercial producers. All right, so I sat back there and I watched as you answered the questions that led up to this, and I got to get my notes because I wrote it down. So I was surprised that there were a large number of people that said they don't use genomic technology and they don't plan to. And another large number of folks said they don't use genomic results. And so what that says to me is, well, you're not using EPDs then if you think you're not using genomic technology. Because most of our EPDs in the Angus breed today are genomically enhanced. So you're using genomic technology whether you know it or not. So when I first started talking, I said if you can use EPDs and you understand accuracy, you can use genomic technology. So let's back up and make sure we're all on the same page in terms of EPDs, okay? What is an EPD? Okay, here's some people muttering expected progeny difference. Yes, it's an expected progeny difference. Okay, but what does it mean? There's probably some really long technical definitions, and if there's any animal breeding professors in the crowd, they'll shoot me for the one I'm about to give you. But the easiest way to describe it is our best estimate of an animal's genetic worth as a parent. Okay, our best estimate of an animal's genetic worth as a parent. It's an estimate. Okay, and we know your Angus breeders, you understand the concept, right? That as we feed more information into that estimate, the accuracy goes up. We become more confident in it, right? So let's take a look at this little schematic that I've picked up here for you. Unproven animals, they can have an EPD, those that don't have any progeny on the ground, right? How do we calculate that? How much of their genetic material does a calf inherit from the sire? Half. Oh, thank goodness they were listening, Megan. You trained them well. Okay? So you inherit half their DNA from the sire, half from the cow. Okay? So it follows that when we go to calculate, I say we, I don't do it, Sally and Brian, when they go to calculate EPDs on unproven animals, you take half the sire's EPD, half the dam's EPD, add them together, you've got a pedigree estimate EPD. Stick an accuracy of 0.05 on it. Okay? They've got one. It's a good estimate. Use them. It's better than knowing nothing, right? So then we go a little while down the road, and everybody in this room is, of course, collecting performance information on their cattle. So you collect birth weights. Sally told us we're going to have 7 million weaning weight records. I hope I remembered your number right. Okay, so you do a good job collecting weaning weight records. You turn those in. So then we've got that animal's own performance information that feeds right into that evaluation. Well, what happens? Friday morning comes, and the EPD's moved a little bit, right? Accuracy has gone up a little bit. For some traits, it can take a long time, or perhaps never, will you get an animal's own performance information on a trait, right? We're not ever going to have actual carcass data on a bull or a cow, probably, right? Okay. But when we really start seeing the moves in the EPDs and really start seeing increased accuracy are when those breeding animals start having calves on the ground, right? We start collecting performance information on the calves. You all submit those through whatever method you choose to submit those things. And that progeny information feeds into the evaluation. Okay? Friday morning rolls around. You look at the EPDs. They've moved. Accuracy has gone up. Genomic information gets used in exactly the same way. Okay? You do a DNA test on a bull or a female. Those results come into the office. Friday morning rolls around. Your EPD may or may not have moved. Maybe a little bit, maybe quite a bit, and the accuracy has gone up. So if you can use an EPD, and if you understand accuracy, not only can you use genomic technology, you are using it. Okay, does that make sense? Okay. Now, the two companies that we currently work with for the Angus breed are Igenity and Pfizer. So the Igenity profile and the Pfizer HD50K test are the two tests that are currently used to genomically enhance EPDs in the Angus cattle evaluation. How do you know if an animal whose pedigree you were looking at has been genomically, if their EPDs are genomically enhanced? You'll notice at the bottom of all of them, there are the Igenity and Pfizer logo, right? So for those of you over here, those are on the bottom of every single one. So just because you see those does not mean that those are genomically enhanced EPDs. Where you need to look is right up under the birth date and the name of that animal. So right up here at the top. And if that says IG384 and or PF50 right up here, then you know that, this particular animal has been tested with both the Igenity profile and the Pfizer HD50K test. So that's how you know if the EPDs are genomically enhanced. Does that make sense? Okay. So are all of the EPDs genomically enhanced? No, not all of them are. Currently, both Pfizer and Igenity results are being used to genomically enhance an equivalent number of traits. So on the calving ease side, of course, calving ease direct, the growth traits of birth, weaning, yearling milk, docility, yearling scrotal circumference, yearling height, mature weight, and then the carcass traits are genomically enhanced with both tests are used to genomically enhance those. Now, in terms of the tests, do they both influence the EPDs by the same magnitude or the same amount? And the answer is no. There's differences between them. I can't emphasize to you enough how much background information and training and research has gone into these numbers. I'm sure most of you in this room have probably looked at Sally's Genomic Choices article where she shows the genetic correlation between the two tests. Both of the companies had to locate a resource population to develop and train their tests. And both companies then had to find a different population of Angus animals to do their internal validation so they felt comfortable commercially releasing a test. But that's really not good enough because once a company decides to commercially release a test, it comes in, and I jokingly call it the Sally Northcutt stamp of approval, but it goes through an extensive testing process against those millions and millions of phenotypic records that exist in our database. And so when we first get these tests from the companies, quite frequently our correlations aren't quite as strong as what the company may say because we have a much larger group of animals, a much better representative sample, obviously, of the Angus breed as a whole. So once these come out and you see Sally's correlations, you can be very comfortable that there's been an extensive amount of research and that they are influencing the EPDs in a way that is proper and representative of our current breed. So I've talked long enough about this slide. You've probably had an opportunity to glance down through there. Higher numbers would indicate there's a stronger correlation between that company's estimate for that trait and what our performance records in the database say. Okay, so you can see Igenity has the jump on a few of them, and then there are some of the traits where Pfizer gets the jump on them. So you just take a look at those. In terms of how much these tests move the EPD or how much they move accuracy, let's talk about that just a little bit. And I'd like to thank Dr. Kent Anderson from Pfizer. He actually is the one that provided me with this particular slide. What it shows on the axis, the horizontal axis, so the x-axis down here, okay, that's the animal's initial accuracy. So you're testing an animal before you do any genomic testing. What was the accuracy of their RADG EPD? It's a tongue twister. Okay. So we see on the left over here, each of those little dots is an animal. So we have some animals that had accuracy of 0.05, some that had an accuracy of 0. How do you get an accuracy of 0 when I told you pedigree estimates were 0.05? Those were animals that had a blank box. They didn't have an RADG EPD at all before the genomic information, okay? So this is initial accuracy on the x-axis. And on the y-axis is, after you do the genetic test, how much did accuracy move? Okay, so if you take a look at that on those animals that didn't have an EPD at all to start with, you do the genetic test and they end up with an accuracy of about the 0.3 mark. Okay, so it moves by about 0.3 on average. As you move farther to the right on that axis, okay, the change gets smaller, doesn't it? So if you do a DNA test on an animal that has a pretty high accuracy to start with, it's not going to move much. You're not going to get much increase in accuracy. Okay? Does that make sense to us, though? It does. Why? Because an EPD is our best estimate of an animal's genetic worth as a parent. The accuracy tells you how good the estimate was, how confident we are in the estimate. So if we're pretty confident in it to start with, adding a little bit more information doesn't really tell us much more. Okay, so not a lot of accuracy move on those high accuracy animals. How about the EPD itself? How much does the EPD move? This is the exact same chart except it's showing EPD movement. Same story. On unproven animals, the EPD moves a lot more or has the potential to move a lot more than it does on animals that had a high accuracy before the test was done. Okay. Let's put this on a progeny equivalent basis. Okay, in other words, how many calves would you have on the ground out of that bull to have the same amount of confidence in his EPD that you get from genomic information? And again, this is using the HD50K test. Take birth weight, for example. Okay, you would have to have 8 progeny records reported to get the same amount of accuracy and the same amount of EPD movement that you get with the HD50K test. Move down to something like yearling weight or RADG. You're getting 15 or 20 head. Okay? So not only do you have to have a lot more calves on the ground, but you are a year on down the road also, right? So there's some time involved in there as well. So I hope that kind of sheds some light on how this genomic information is being used currently. So if you're using Angus EPDs, more than likely you're using genomic technology, whether you know it or not. That's good news for you. That's also good news for your customers, because there's a lot of technology, as Megan discussed, that may be coming down the pike. Technology changes, technology improves. But it's our job at AGI and the association to figure out the appropriate method to put that into the EPD. And the EPD is always your best measure. If you've got the genomic information sitting beside you and you've got the EPD, ignore the genomics. It's already in the EPD. The EPD is your best estimate of that animal's genetic worth as a parent. Why? Because it takes into account every single piece of information that we have on that animal, not just the genomic piece. Because as Megan said, as good as our genomic tests are these days, they still don't explain 100% of the genetic variation. We still have to have progeny. We still have to have an animal's actual performance data. Okay? So I've given my speech and my soapbox for purebred breeders. What I would like to do now is to introduce Mark McCauley. And you may, who is, as many of you probably know, assistant vice president for CAB on the production side. And you may wonder why we've got a CAB guy coming up here to talk about genomics. I think it makes sense if you think about what Mark spends a lot of his time doing, which is to ensure that there is a long-term supply of superior, high-quality Angus genetics available for the certified Angus beef brand. And so with that, I'm going to turn it right over to you, Mark, to talk about GeneMax. All right.